And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Womack Style is the latest album project from Binky Womack, a member of one of the most iconic music families of all time. He is the nephew of music legend Bobby Womack. Binky's new album is released through Gonzo Multimedia UK. Binky has his own studio in Burbank, California, called the Earhole Recording Studio, and acts as a producer to many top-line artists. He also has a publishing company, Abindolari Music, which is represented by World Domination Music for the world, excluding North America. Abindolari is also the vehicle for new acts such as Jay, as well as Binky's own material. Binky Womack, songwriter, musician, producer, remixer, and now artist and performer, as well as part of the Womack musical dynasty. The majority of the songs on Womack Style are originals by Binky Womack, and with all instruments being played by him and overall production in his hands, this is truly Womack style music. The musicianship is one of the same high quality that we expect from any song production from the Womacks, and Binky's guitar work is simply outstanding. All tracks are available for licensing, sync, and covers. Also, the track When You're Wrong is being pushed by Kings of Spins. Binky will be involved in the memorial tour for his late uncle, Bobby Womack, and his set will include favorites from Bobby's pen as well as new material from Binky. Please welcome R&B slash rock music artist, producer, and nephew of the legendary Bobby Womack, Binky Womack, to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Binky.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, man. Being such, you know, part of royalty, music royalty, and that's got to be something for you, huh? It's in the blood.
Yeah. You know, we grew up. All we did in our family was music. Everyone was a writer, producer, singer, mm-hmm. and artist.
That was your how many we know about your uncle. What about in your own household? Was your mom and dad also musically involved?
You know, Womack and Womack were my uncles and my auntie.
Right.
And Mary Wells from Motown was also my aunt.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so my Uncle Cecil, when my uncle was an artist, he was producing all the other records. Like, he was producing Teddy Pendergrass, Bonnie Raitt. He was producing Chaka Khan and all these other artists. So there was a lot of sessions when I was growing up. So that's how I would go in for my uncle, and I'd play guitar. I'd get to play with Elton John, or I'd get to play with Chaka Khan. And my Aunt Mary Wells, she'd always be on tour. And I was always the guy at like 16 years old, 15 years old, to get her band straight. Because, you know, she'd be in a different city every night with a different band.
Right.
So I would be there, playing with her. You know, that's just what we did. And then we weren't doing that. My uncle would be recording his new album. So we would be in the studio either singing, background, or playing guitar on his record.
Wow. But what a life growing up, man. You know?
Yeah. We had all the big stars were just run through, you know, and all the celebrities like Muhammad Ali would drop by, Joe Frazier would drop by, you know.
Wow.
Martin, Marvin Gaye lived up the block, you know.
Did he really? Huh.
Yeah.
Now, where were you living at the time? I know your uncle's from Cleveland. Where were you living at the time?
You know, they moved from Cleveland early when they were young.
Right.
We were living in West Hollywood, Beverly Hills area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm from D.C. originally. I'm in Florida now, but, you know, of course, Marvin's from D.C. We had a lot of greats from D.C., like Roberta Flack also came from Washington, D.C., and... You know, I grew up with the great R&B, soul, and Motown sound, you know, and I really miss the authenticity of that music. You know, it's you know, I'm very disappointed with mainstream music. You know, I'm saying mainstream, what's on the regular radio, AM and FM these days, because it's all electronic dance music. You know, I miss the bands that had the horn section, you know?
Yes, exactly.
The great musicians.
But, you know, I think a lot of that is going to come back. They always talk about cycles and,
right.
You know, things change and they come back. But, you know, we have to get back to that. You can see the emergence of that with, like, Joe Bonamassa and
right.
Things like that. So it's coming back.
But, you know, the great soul artists, you know, and R&B guys, you know, I mean, you know, when I was in 1973, I was first exposed. I went to a concert. It was, you know, I was really into Rare Earth, you know, from Motown, Rare Earth.
Uh-huh.
And it was Rare Earth, the Funkadelics, and the Ohio Players. And that was the first time, you know, I think the Ohio Players had Funky Worm. They were just coming out. But just the band, all the horns, and what talent was up on that stage. And, you know, that's the kind of thing I miss, you know?
It's amazing. I mean, you say the Ohio Players, I saw the Ohio Players play some years back. And, yeah, it's just phenomenal how that sound jumps from the record into, like, a three-dimensional sound right in your face.
That's right.
Yeah. There's nothing like that.
There's nothing like that. To see that live, you know? And they played better than the records. You know, they're great live performers.
Exactly.
You know, the James Brown was another guy. You know, he had his horn section. He had the girls in the band, and you know, great shows. You know, and I miss that. I really do. Where did you get the name Binky?
You know what? As a kid, they called me Binky because they said no matter where I went, I had the Binky in my mouth.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And you kept that with you.
it just stuck with me.
That's funny, because your real name is Curtis, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm after my dad, Curtis Jr.
Curtis Jr., okay. And another great artist, Curtis Mayfield, which was the first concert I ever went to was Curtis Mayfield. First show I've ever seen. I think he was just put out Superfly. That just came out when I saw him, which was huge. Great album.
He's a phenomenal writer.
Oh yeah, you and your uncle Bobby have so much in common musically. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is a genuine talent for creating and understanding great music, and that, you know, like I said, that's what's missing today.
Yeah, you know, trying to bring that back. It's like swimming upstream,
right?
Because like the things that you say, I like to eventually add all those elements into my band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have a full horn section, you know what I mean?
Right.
But it's hard to just, you know, to carry that right now, you know, in this day and time. Cause,
right.
But we have the smoking rhythm section. So,
yeah.
Because Prince, I think Prince killed plenty shows, and man,
mm-hmm.
he never had horn section, but he had his... Yeah, his keyboard player playing horn lines.
Right.
He's another great performer that was just phenomenal, you know, sounding better than the records.
Yeah, that's what we need, the musicians. And, you know, it's the same thing in rock, you know, the great guitar players. You don't hear those guys. You mentioned Joe Bonamassa, but, you know, every band had a great guitar player back then, you know.
Yeah, and, things are getting so technical now where like you said, the soul and the spirit has come out,
right?
And things, people have learned how to be technical and how to play arpeggios, different things like that, different techniques, you know, become a technical player other than, you know, coming from your soul, your spirit, like a Hendrix, like a Clapton.
Yep. Talk about your publishing company. Am I pronouncing it right? Is it Bindelari?
It's Bindelari.
Bindelari Music. And talk about the publishing company for a little bit.
Actually, it's really like a kind of multimedia company. You know, that's just the banner that I put all my work under. Because as being a producer, mainly, you know, people still want you to produce. When people heard I was, you know, I wasn't producing as much, I was going to be an artist, some people got mad because they thought I wasn't going to be available to produce their record.
Right.
And it's like, well, yeah, I still produce records, but I'm not, like, available like I used to be when you need me. You know,
right.
I may be doing something else. I may be on tour. I may be playing a show.
Sure.
If you want to come to your studio. You know, people kind of got spoiled because it was just like, hey, we can get a great record out of banking.
Mm-hmm.
And let me call him right now, you know. And you know, so I take a lot of heat for that. But it's like, man, people are so selfish, you know.
Yeah.
They want you to do what they want you to do. But, yeah, the company itself is like, you know, I'm signing new acts, new artists, and I'm trying to sign all positive stuff, you know. There's a lot of records, I mean, you can get paid on that's just like, it does nothing for our society, you know. And
right.
I'm trying to curve away from that and not be like just the guy that will make any type of record just to, you know, to get dollars off of it.
Yeah.
So,
good for you, man. Good for you. Who's the artist? Did I pronounce that name right, Jay?
Yeah, Jay. Jay was out of Philadelphia.
Right.
She's very talented, great writer, great singer.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a great all-around talent. You know, she studied at LMU College. Just phenomenal talent. You know, she's someone to be reckoned with, and you know, someone to take notice to. And you know, there are other acts. I have another act, Ivanka. Same thing. She's real soulful. She's like a Janis Joplin or something.
Wow.
Like, she's singing like, you know, she's from Australia, and she's singing like really, really soulful music. You know, she was a model there in Australia, and she's, you know, here now. And a few rap acts and things, but you know. Just looking for really good talent and trying to make really good records and trying to be a part of the solution and not the problem in this in these times, you know, some
right.
way out times.
Well, you know what, we're lacking the pioneers, you know, and most of them have passed away now. So we need guys like you to step up and save the music scene, man. You know.
It's out there, and it's just the platform is so vast now. That people have to, you know, shows like this make people aware, like, hey, let me check this out, you know, something that they wouldn't listen to, because as long as it's right in your face on the radio, you believe, you know, the consumer believes that's all there is out there.
Yeah,
you know?
I know, unfortunately, you're right.
So, just bringing it to the forefront.
Exactly. Now, the World Domination Music, you say, it says for the world excluding North America. What do you mean by that?
Well, World Domination, they're my sub-publishers.
Okay.
So it's hard to police the whole world by yourself.
Right.
So, you know, they have an interest in, they share an interest in the growth of what I'm doing. So, you know, they help promote and, you know, make people aware, you know, they handle like they're right now they're trying to get the record to the BBC to get it played.
Right.
So they handle all that stuff because, you know, it's hard to be in the U.S. and then handle your affairs abroad. So they're my abroad police.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's so straight, legendary artist that, you know, they do much better overseas than they do in the United States anymore. And there's still markets out there that, you know, they sell out, you know, large audiences, and, you know, they come over here and they're, you know, in small venues, you know, they can't sell out the big venues anymore.
Well, over here, people are so, let me give you an example. People, they believe in paying, like, for their brand. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever is the top brand. They may not know about it. They may not know if it's good or if it's not good, but if it's the top brand and everybody, then they want to be a part of it.
Right.
I can throw a show. We do a lot of charity events. So I could throw a show somewhere in the States and let everyone in the show free and provide free food and free drinks and have like a day of peace and something like that. And not many people will, not everyone will, it won't be as full if I charge $50 a seat.
Mm-hmm.
Now when people see, that we're doing this Walmart thing and it's $50 a seat, they feel that it's more exclusive, that something's going to be better than if we're doing it for free.
Right.
So people like to pay for the brand. I know guys that just wear like $300 pair of tennis shoes. You know, I was like, how can you get a $300 pair of tennis shoes? And they said, I could sell these for $450. You know, they're worth $5 on the internet. It's like, wow, it's just a certain pair of shoes. But it's all about the brand. People are like looking at, being, hey, this is worth paying for because someone else said so. You know,
right.
And over there, it's more like, people are just accepting what's good and what's great, and it's not as much as here. Even that's with, there's boxers, like, that may have been a great boxer at one time that could sell out arena, but they hold fights overseas because they can get a better draw,
right.
They're not used to getting that sort of thing. So I think that's just what it is. People just want to, pay for stuff,
You know what I hate the most is when you get a band like Journey or, even Yes, and, that there's hardly anybody left in the band anymore, and they still use that brand name, and they still draw a lot of people. And, people don't do their homework, Journey really pisses me off because there's only, right now, for a long time, there's only been Mick Jones in the band and nobody else.
Exactly. And it's not like these guys have passed on, It's not like you couldn't call Steve Perry and say, hey, dude, you want to do this thing with us,
Right.
So, yeah. And the same thing was with Guns N' Roses for so long, right?
Yep.
Axl was doing, his own thing with all these different guys. And now when they bring, the original guys back, look how people flock to see these guys, and they're paying $300 a ticket.
Yep.
So it's just like, you can't be mad at the companies for marketing. The consumer has to be a little more choosy and, just stop, get out of that mindset where, hey, I'm exclusive at this place, or getting their satisfaction out of paying or buying a brand.
Exactly. Exactly right. Your music has it all, man. R&B, soul, jazz, rock and roll. So, it really should be appealing to everyone.
If you definitely give it, just listen to it. I think once people, hear it, you will be able to not, you will get a higher consciousness of what you were missing. You know what I mean? Like
right.
If you taste something really great, if you're used to eating, junk all the time, you taste something that's really great, you're like, wow, this is light years away from what I'm used to. So yeah, that's exactly what it is, and it takes a while to get to that because, when you're coming up, you do things mostly for the cash. But I had gotten to the point where I didn't need any more money and I didn't need anything so I could do things like that were more satisfactory,
right?
And that's where I'm at now. So the stuff that I'm putting out is just going to get better and better because this is the first record. I mean, I've been doing this for so many years as a producer, but this is the first record I put out behind myself. And I mean, on the scales that all around the world, the reviews I get, 4 out of 5 stars on the 5-star scale and 9 out of 10 stars on the 10-star scale. And I'm like, I'm really, pleased with that because I know my next record is going to be so much better.
Mm-hmm.
than this one. And this one is fantastic. I believe that it's the type of record that, you know, could be a sleeper and win a Grammy, you know, if it gets enough notoriety and, you know, people start to catch on to it.
Well, that's it. You got, you know, the right person needs to, you know, help you out as far as publicity and getting in the doors in the right places, because there's so many stubborn idiots out there today that, you know, they just believe in playing the same crap over and over again, and I hate that. You know, I was a DJ back in late 70s, and, you know, we played some great, pretty eclectic style of music back then. We had disco, we had new wave, we had, Zeppelin was still on the, you know, it had a couple of top 40 hits. Donna Summer was huge. It was good times. The first rap song came out, Sugar Hill Gang, you know. I played the first, successful rap song on the air, Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight. Never forget that. It was good times, you know, and we don't have that anymore. To me, it's just a derivative. Today's music is a derivative of disco. You know, you still got that same beat behind a lot of the songs. Artists are using auto-tune.
It's crazy.
It is
and
crazy.
You know what? You have to really be behind the scenes to know how crazy that is.
Yeah.
I was producing this guy, you know, and I'd heard his stuff. I was like, oh, this stuff is cool. You know, it sounds, you know, it's radio stuff, the basic stuff you'd hear, the same formula, because that's what it is. Everything is cookie cutter now. So
right.
He comes into the studio, and he goes in the booth to sing the hook. And I'm not knowing. He's like, hey, so put the auto-tune on. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I thought we would, you know, just tune it up later. He's like, no, I have to, you know, hear it with the auto-tune. So he's running to this auto-tune. And he's trying to get it to where he's triggering it to where it's, you know, and he comes out of the booth. He goes, well, you know, dude, I can't sing at all. And I was like, somehow, like, what do you mean you can't sing at all? It's like, yeah, you know, if I don't have the auto tune on, I just can't do it. I was like, wow, this is crazy.
Man, you just summed up the whole entire music industry today. That's it. That's pretty much it. I mean, there's a few good singers out there, people that actually sing well, you know, and don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, but there's not many.
There's not many. And that's what, to agree and elaborate on what you were saying, is that's the problem now, because things used to be so deep. Like, you'd have the OJs, and you'd have,
that's
like,
right,
the spinners. You have, like, the Stylistic, and you had, like, all the Journey and Rush. And you have so many different genres, and,
mm-hmm,
and they were deep. It wasn't just, like, one guy. It wasn't just, like, Justin Bieber, you know, he was, there were like 30 other acts under that, you know, I mean, that were doing their own thing kind of in the same vein. But now all these things, they have the same formula, you know.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
can, you know where the music is getting ready to go, like, okay, this is where the buildup goes, this is where they double up the snare, this is where the snare roll comes, and so this is where you put the explosion. It's just
right.
Like a little map. This is where the explosion goes, and oh, this is where the breakdown, and it's just the piano and the girl singing. It's the same formula on every record, you know.
I know.
I try to dig deep. I have Sirius Radio, and there's like maybe 200 channels, and man, I still can't find it.
Yeah, I hope you're right, and I've heard some other people say the same thing, that things may come back, you know, and may recycle back. But I don't think we'll ever, you know, match the success of the 60s and, you know, 70s as far as music. I don't think that'll ever happen again.
If people get behind, it's just like there'll be one great act out there and everyone will just butt into that one act, you know.
Right.
Like Adele, you know.
Right, exactly.
She comes out and now it's just like there's no one else, you know what I mean? And that's the problem. It's just like everything is to that one person until, you know, they reach some type of, you know, iconic God status, you know. And something happens, and they bring in another one to replace that person. So.
And then all the idiot music critics. Oh, she's already a legend. You know, they already call her a legend. You know, I can't. I am so tired of hearing Taylor Swift. I had enough of her. You know, she's just got to go away. I can't take her anymore. I'll be honest with you, man. Enough is enough.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. My favorite group right now that in this modern era. It's the Chainsmokers.
Yeah. I haven't listened to them yet, but I've seen them around the internet. I need to check them out.
Yeah, they have a certain blend of where it's not just like they're just not cookie cut. They're kind of cut from that cloth, but they have like a little rock edge. It's a little something more.
Yeah, I'll check them out. Maybe we'll get them on the show, you know, help them out at least. I want to talk about the new album, man. You were talking about you're getting 4 stars and this and that. I'm giving it 5 stars. That's how good it is. It's awesome. And I do have some favorites on there. That they're all good. They're all great tracks. I think one of my favorites is Must Be Nice. You know, it's such a, you know, beautiful tune, you know. The other one I like is, let's see. I mean, I like them all, but I just want to tell you my favorites. The cover of I'm in Love, you did a magnificent job on that.
Thanks.
And also, the one that really blew me away was, of course, Love Is.
Yeah, man, that's my favorite go-to record. I mean, I love, when I was growing up, you know, we played punk rock. My favorite group then was the Sex Pistols.
Right.
I loved Ozzy. AC/DC to this day, I mean, I can bang my head to any one of their albums. You know, Guns N' Roses / went to school with me. So I was in that scene, you know. So I would love... I wouldn't want to confuse everybody and just make a hard rock record, because I think, you know, so that's why I go to that record and then I just let it all go. I think there'll always be some type of record like that on my album.
Right. You're so good at it, you know. You're so good at playing rock.
Yeah. And then when I say, hey, man, I played all the instruments on that track,
yep.
You know, people say, oh, really? You know, yeah, it's just me.
That's awesome. You know, you remind me a little bit of Todd Rundgren, you know, because he did a lot of producing. He played a lot of stuff on his tracks as well, you know.
Yeah, you have good control over things. A lot of times, guys, you bring something to the table, you know, that you may not necessarily, you know, have thought of, but when you get the true essence, like, you know, that's what you got out of a guy like... Prince. He always, you know, that was all him in those records, you know.
Right.
The other
explosive tune, that the video is incredible, is Put Something Down on It. Oh my God! That and the video. Who's the girl in the video, man?
Oh, that's Michelle.
Oh,
that's
my
Michelle,
God.
Yeah.
She's beautiful.
She's a great girl.
Oh yeah! I mean, wow! Everyone's got to see that video, which is posted on YouTube. And you wrote the song, right?
Yes.
You wrote that song. That's one of my favorite rock tunes to this date. I'm telling you, you got so much talent, and you're very eclectic. You know, all your music styles. It's hard to. Like you said, I mean, it's just hard to, you know, just do a rock album or just do an R&B album because you're so talented at both. So you got it all on this new album.
Well, thank you. I hope people get out there and check it out. You know, I'm sure they'll like it. If you listen, you won't be able to turn it off.
Exactly. I mean, it's you can't. This is an album that you're going to be listening to over and over again. You know, it's everybody needs it in their collection. The song Just Enough reminded me a little bit. I met Luther Ingram a long time ago. My dad had stores in D.C., and there was a nightclub next to us, and a lot of people, like, you know, Luther Ingram and Al Green, and a lot of people were playing those clubs, and they'd walk in and they'd buy stuff from us, you know. And I actually sold Luther Ingram a pair of binoculars back in the day. Really nice guy. But, you know, the song reminded me a little bit of Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right, you know, kind of that kind of feel.
Like, that's what it is, man. It's like, regardless of what decade and what time you're in, the emotion of people will always be the same. You know, there'll always be love and hurt, good times and bad times. So you can always tap into that, and you tap into, you know, spirit and soul. You're able to uplift people when they're down, and, you know, capture those moods, help them remember a time in their life.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we all timeline music, you know, we timeline our lives by music, you know?
Yes.
That's why it's so important, yeah. Now, me and my guitar, that's the story of you living through the separation of your parents, right? And,
yes.
And your uncle gave you your first guitar?
Yes. My uncle gave me a guitar when I was 10 years old. I remember that, like, I was in the fourth grade.
Right.
And I had nothing, you know what I mean? And he brought me this brand new, shiny, sparkly guitar. And that guitar, you know, it's all in that story. It, during the bad times or the good times, or I always just went to that guitar and we jailed together.
Mm-hmm.
We made it. We made it out of hard times.
Do you still have it?
No, you know, when I played that guitar until the pegs fell off, until the pickups fell inside the guitar.
Oh, man.
But another, the thing about that was one day I went in Guitar Center. I was in my teens. And my uncle was in there.
Really?
Yeah, and I had other guitars, you know, on my own since then. But I was in there, and he said, hey, pick out anything you want. Pick out any guitar you want.
Wow.
I was like, wow, guitar. No, there's like 10,000 guitars. And this is like, he said, well, I know it's a big decision. If you can't do it, then we can come back another day. I was like, no. And I grabbed this guitar off, and I still have that one. It was a sweet moment. He always reinforced that.
Uncles are great, aren't they?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I always liked all my uncles too. You know, that's awesome. And what an uncle to have! He was so cool. You know.
Yeah, he's great, man.
Yeah,
he's great.
Love Addict is a guy that's everywhere in life. I mean, you can't go anywhere without seeing Snoop Dogg.
Yeah,
the man, you know. Snoop Dogg should be doing your PR work, I'm telling you.
Yeah. The thing about Love Addict,
right.
When we recorded Love Addict, my Uncle Bobby was in the record singing those lines.
Right.
And I had to remove him because of I had all kind of legal problems with people that were saying, you know, they had rights to this and they own that and you know, I needed their permission. I was like, man, we recorded this stuff, you know, on this free will, and, you know, it's a great record. They wanted to take over ownership of my work, you know.
Right.
I wrote this song. I played all the instruments. I produced it. My uncle sang on it. Now, how do you own it? So,
That's crazy.
So Sony said, look, we got to take it out. I mean, we got to pull the record. So I took my uncle's parts out. It's a great record now, but it was even greater, you know, having my uncle in there with me, him, and Snoop together.
Yeah. It's a great track.
Yeah.
Then you got, you know, When You're Wrong, you've got, which is that was written, right, with you and your uncle. And you guys, did you guys record that together in the studio?
Yeah. Actually, there's some footage of us in the studio recording that song.
Really? Is that on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh, I got to check it out.
I was producing them, and I actually wrote that song for him.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing, you know, I ran into all these legal battles. I mean, you won't believe it. It was just, it makes for a good story, but
right.
it was no fun when it was happening, you know.
Yeah.
Now I can look back on it and say, well, maybe that's what, you know, God wanted me to be in the forefront. So,
right.
you know, he made him come off the record so I would be on the record.
Right.
So, but yeah, it was, I wrote that for him, and we went in, we had a great time recording it, and I thought it would be a Grammy record for him, but hopefully it'll be a Grammy record for me.
I hope so. If you need any votes, man, just, you know, let me know. Well, you know, because, you know, after this interview, we, you know, you'll be on YouTube, you'll be on iTunes, and 5 different music sites. So, you know, I do a great job promoting all the artists that are on the show.
Cause oh, that's great. That's
fantastic. I only get artists on the show that I believe in. So, you know, I'm like you. I'm not going to do it just to get somebody on the show. I only some people that I, you know, really enjoy and enjoy their music.
Well, I really appreciate it, and my gratitude to you for your support. Because, and this time, yeah, I definitely, you know, I can use all the support that I can get.
Gravity is a John Mayer remake, which you're a fan of John Mayer, correct?
Yeah, John Mayer is just so unbelievably great.
Right.
You know what I mean? He's one of those artists that we talk about. He just takes a great song and a great story and puts a great feel on it, and that's it. There's no frills, you know, there's no special effects, you know. And even in the show, it's just raw goodness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I first heard his first record, Waiting for the World to Change, I was like, man, I wish I had wrote this record. He writes those type of records, you know,
mm-hmm.
that are just fantastic records.
Right.
You know, and he continues to come with great records, you know. So I had to do one of his records, and I thought Gravity would be a good go at it.
Another great track.
Yeah.
Another great track. You know, I always said, the other thing, you know, I talked to, you know, guys like Tom Rush and, you know, people that, you know, play a lot of acoustic. And, you know, to me, sometimes there's nothing like a guy up on stage by himself with a guitar and a story. You know what I mean? I mean, just the simplicity, you know, of that, you know. And to, like you said, today everything's overproduced, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about your music is great. You know, I did watch the band on YouTube, and that's what got me interested in you, is actually watching the band and just, you know, I forgot where you were playing at. It might probably, I think it was somewhere in California, and then I did see you at, I think it was Whiskey A Go Go.
Uh-huh.
You guys playing there, and, you know, talking about that, when are you going to, you know, hit the road, man?
Man, I'm trying, as the record, you know, gets out there and
right.
it starts growing, the demand comes up, you know, and people are going to come out and fill the seats. Because, you know, in the end, you know, that's all it's about, you know. People want, you know, promoters just want you to come out and fill up the show.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and regardless of how great the record is, unless, you know, people are with it, you know, they know about it, you know, they're not going to come out to the shows. Especially, you know, well, overseas is different. You know, they're trying to get me to come to the U.K., but I'm like, hey, I just can't get back up and bring 10 guys to the U.K.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, you're definitely going to see us out there, and as you start to, you know, the record starts to become more apparent to people, and people become familiar with it, we will be, you know, we will be there. I mean, we're ready. Right now, we're just... We're woodshedding. We, like my uncle used to say, we're practicing, so when we come out, we're just dynamite.
Right, right. I like that. Makes sense.
Give you what you don't expect. You know, I want you to come out and say, man, that guy was fantastic. And if you happen to catch me, because I'm trying to open for, you know, like Adele or someone. I'm trying to get on some of her Australian leg of her tour. And when people come out to see her and they see me and they're like, who was that guy? He was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know? I really like this stuff, you know, so that's what we're shooting for right now is getting out on the tour.
Yeah, I can see you guys being huge, you know, really big in Europe and, you know, places like Japan, Australia, you know. And, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, Beth Hart, who's, she's been on the show and, you know, she made it big overseas. And she's still, you know, she's just now catching on here in the States where people are realizing how talented she is, you know. And but it took, you know, her being in the States for a long time. And, you know, I've talked to, you remember Susie Quattro? You know, she never left England. She, you know, she's born and bred in Michigan, but she just couldn't, you know, she couldn't make it here. And she's been living in England for like 30, 40 years, and she's still very popular, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of stories like that, man. I mean, you can take someone who can't sing at all, auto-tune them, and if they're, you know, they have a certain look, you say, okay, we're going to put the best producer behind her, and we're going to just plaster her face everywhere. She's going to be there, you know.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Next success.
Real shame. But your uncle was, you know, he was so cool because, you know, a lot like you, he's kind of, you know, he played a lot of things. Friends of the Stones because, he did, of course, the classic hit with the Stones, It's All Over Now, which was one of the big hits for the Stones in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he was friends with Ronnie Wood, I know. And did you meet the Stones? Did they ever come over?
Let me tell you, I met Ronnie Wood,
right?
You know, because him and my uncle were like probably the tightest. And I was when I was in the 12th grade, my uncle was touring with the Stones,
right?
And I was a guitar player, so that was an adventure.
Maybe you need to collaborate. Give those all the guys that you know your dad collaborated with. Give them a call. You know, I know Wilson Pickett's not around, but call up the Stones.
Yeah, you know, actually, I had just talked to my uncle, out of my uncle's brothers, there's only two left. My dad and my uncle Wombat. So I was just talking to him the other day about we were going to call Ronnie Wood for some support over on the record. So he actually put a call in to him.
Good.
About it. So, yeah, you know, that would be nice. But, you know, it's kind of easier said than done, you know.
Right.
Track those guys down. You know, it's easier to bump into them by chance on the street somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of legality, you know. It's not that easy anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's like imagine the legalities of just my uncle singing on my song.
I know, isn't that crazy?
that there's 35 lawyers had to talk it out. You know, it's just like okay, wow. You know.
Yeah. I wonder what Natalie Cole had to go through when she sang. She did the duet, you know, with her dad. You know. That she probably went through a lot before she got that approved.
Yeah. You know what? And it probably wasn't her doing all the legwork and the running around. They probably got it worked out and then brought her in. Hey, can you just, this would be great for you, you know?
Yeah. I want to remind the audience of how great your uncle was. Some of the tunes he did, I mean, one of my favorites, I Wish He Didn't Trust Me So Much. It's All Over Now. It was the second one. He did California Dreamin'. His rendition of California Dreamin' was just amazing. And another big hit, Looking for Love, which became a Jay Giles band cover and a big hit for them. He sang That's the Way I Feel About You, Women's Gotta Have It, Harry Hippy, Across 110th Street in the 80s. He did a song for George Benson, Breezin'.
Yeah,
If You Think You're Lonely Now, I mean, the list goes on. And he started with the Valentinos, and I guess him and Sam Cooke worked together. And he ended up marrying Sam Cooke's wife, right? After they broke up and everything, after Sam Cooke passed away.
Yeah.
Interesting story, man. They need to write a movie about your uncle, you know?
Yeah, that would be something else. That would be something, yeah, because his music, he writes that kind of music that we're talking about that can mm-hmm. be covered by anyone, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I think that's what I have in my records, that, you know, someone else could, you know, a rock group could cover it. And nowadays, you can't really, you know, there's not too many songs that you want to make do your own rendition of. And this new, like you said, this new modern stuff.
Right. Everyone also needs, they need to buy your uncle's memoir, Midnight Mover. Because that's also another great story there.
Yeah, he had a lot of great stories, man. And when you get around guys that have been in the industry for so long, and,
yep.
you know, they have some of the greatest stories. I mean, they used to tell me stories about Sam Cooke, you know, mm-hmm. and how you know, when they were traveling, you know, it was the worst time of a racial
tension,
problem,
yeah.
racial tensions, and they would go to these places and they would travel in a limousine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell them, like, you know, say they go to a hotel and they tell them, hey, you know, we'll give you a room, and you know, rooms are $5 a night.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll give you five rooms, but they're $100 a piece, you know. And Sam would say, okay, just give me the whole floor.
Right.
You know, things like that.
Oh, man. So. You know, those guys, what they had to go through back in the day, you know, I can't even imagine. You know, I heard that Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee had some, you know, almost fist fights with each other. I could see that happening.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Chuck Berry had to feel that Jerry Lee was just, you know, taking his flavor and cashing in on it. You know,
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Well, Jerry Lee was, to me, kind of a, you know, redneckish. You know, we owe so much, though, to those guys, you know, from, you know, I go back, Robert Johnsons and those guys, you know.
That's way back. Those guys were the...
Those were the rock and roll heroes, you know, to everybody, not just rock and roll, for everybody. So those are the guys that, you know, we should be putting on a platter. Well, one of the guys that your dad was good friends with is one of my heroes, Wilson Pickett. I mean... Oh, my God, that guy had so much talent, you know. He was awesome.
Yeah, he was a great, great artist. The thing was, when my uncle was coming up, he was the guitar player for those guys. You know, he just played guitar for Sam Cooke. He played guitar for Wilson Pickett. And he wrote that song. I guess that was the first one to cover it, mm-hmm. I'm in Love. Wilson
right.
Pickett was the first one.
I wish your uncle was still around, man, because, you know, he still had more time left, and who knows what he would have been doing now. I know he had a little bit of a hard time during the disco era, which, you know, he probably just didn't want to conform, you know, to that type of music. But I knew he could have done it. I mean, if Kiss can do it, anybody can do it.
yeah, he could have definitely done it. But he was really big on being true to,
right.
to himself, you know.
Yeah.
And he had been in it for a while. You know, he knew that it would pass. You know, he said, hey, this thing will pass. And, you know, it'll get back to what he would call the realness of
Real music. Binky, here's a question I ask everyone that I interview. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like, you know, the movie Field of Dreams, to perform, produce, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Man, I think there's so many people that I would like to work with. But, man, I think I would want to work with... I would have to say, James Brown.
James Brown, yeah.
Yeah, James Brown at his because they're, man, that one of the guys that see, it's easy to go when there's a blueprint already. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where you can look at an artist and say, hey, I see James Brown in this guy. I see Sly Stone.
I see,
you know, because these guys have done it. But the first guy that says, hey, we're going to do it this way. I mean, from James Brown, you got Bootsy, you got Parliament Funkadelic, you got Prince, you got all that whole funk era. You know,
right.
You got the Ohio players. It's like,
yeah.
He would be that tree that had so many branches on it that it was like, I would want to know, you know, what he was hearing in his head. You know, how are you putting this together, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I would love to work with him.
And also, probably the greatest dancer I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, you know, all those guys who start doing his moves, you know, Terrence Trent D'Arby, Prince, everybody does those splits.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was the creator. You know, even rock acts like David Lee Roth would jump up and, you know, touch his toes. You know, all that came from, you know, from those guys, you know.
I don't know how he did it. You know, two guys I modeled after when I learned to dance was James Brown, and I used to try to do some of his moves. One time I got kicked out of a disco for trying to do something. Some James Brown.
Hey, that's it. This guy's got to go.
Yeah. Two guys came and threw me out, man. And the other guy was Tom Jones. You know, he back in his heyday, he was pretty good dancer as well.
Yeah.
So what's next for Binky Womack?
Man, I'm going to keep on doing this. I'm going to stay true to this music till it gets as big as you and I both know it can get.
Mm-hmm.
And tour the world delivering this good music and try to bring some positivity into the lives of people, man, because people are so lost right now, you know.
I know.
I had a guy tell me, man, the only way you can get your music on the radio right now is to sell your soul to the devil. And
yeah.
I was like, gee, man, come on. Have a little hope and be optimistic.
Yeah.
You know? Who would think that, you know, that that's the only way you can go today, you know? It's like, that's...
Let me ask you something. Do you think the Illuminati is real?
You know what? I think there's people who can help you do things, and I'm sure they have a wish list of what they would like for you to do. And if we'd like to put that together and call it the Illuminati, then, you know, yeah, everybody will, not everybody, but a lot of people will sell their self out to accomplish, you know, something. And it's the same in a small job or whatever, you know. Even if you work at McDonald's and the manager's going to be great to you because you're going to, you know, be his little... you know, little workhorse or whatever.
Right.
But so far as, you know, all that stuff about, you know, the Illuminati and the rituals and things like that, I think if you go looking for something like that, you'll find it. You'll find whatever you're looking for.
Right.
And I'm looking for the light and to be in the light, to stay in the light, you know. So that's what I hope to find, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, I think you'll find it, man. Yeah, you know who I interviewed? My last interview before you was Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr., and they're so awesome, both of them. And they had that positive spirit, and, you know, they've been married since 1969, you know, and they're...
Yeah, man, it's been forever.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, being in showbiz together, that's a great story there, too. You know,
and that's a great bond.
Oh yeah, the Fifth Dimension were another. Those guys were legends as well. Binky, you're welcome to come back to the show anytime you want, man, and you know, keep us updated on your career. Anything I can do for you as far as promoting, let me know. You know, thank you so much for being here today. Good luck with the new album. It's awesome. 5 stars all the way. And
hey, man,
we hope to see you on the road, you know, soon. I wouldn't doubt you, you know, making a huge success in like Europe and Japan and Australia. I know it's expensive. But I know you'll be very, very successful. You know, sometimes it might take a little of that before you come back here, because just the way our scene is, you know.
Yes.
I think you're gonna succeed, because you got so much freaking talent. It's unbelievable. You're gonna be great.
Well, man, thank you for everything. And yeah, anytime I can do something for you, reach out. And anything you can do, yeah, I appreciate it, man. I really do.
Well, you can take me to Guitar Center, and I'll pick out a guitar. How's that?
Hey, man, that was my uncle's trick. I haven't got there yet.
Uncle Binky. Thanks, man. Thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Peace, man. Take care. You can purchase the great new album by Binky Womack entitled Womack Style at Amazon.com and GonzoMultimedia.com. For more information about Binky Womack, visit www.BinkyWomackLA.com or on his Facebook page, www.facebook.com/BindelaryMusic. He's also got Twitter, https://twitter.com/BinkyWomack. Very special thanks to Billy James, the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR, for setting up this interview with Binky Womack, and to the awesome duo of Doug and Don Newsome with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly, Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And please don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and a Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C. Available now at Amazon.com, and I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.